Hello and welcome to Blogosphere Serious Influence, the podcast all about the business side of the influencer industry. I'm Alice Audley and I'm the founder of Blogosphere, which hopefully you've heard of. But if not, Blogosphere is a media company rooted in the world of influencers. We run events, an influencer network, and publish a nationally distributed print magazine. And now a podcast too, which I'll be presenting. If there are any questions about the influencer industry that you want answered, be sure to tweet us your suggestions. Our Twitter handle is @BlogosphereM. And if you want to learn more about influencers and the influencer industry, be sure to visit blogosphere magazine.com and invest in a subscription to our essential magazine. We're excited to announce that Series 1 of Serious Influence has an exclusive sponsor, the smart thinking money app, Yolt. Yolt is an app that I personally use, so I'm delighted to partner with them. You can sync your accounts, credit cards, and pensions in one view and track your spending habits, how much you're spending and what you're spending it on. I buy a lot of coffee. Yolt takes the stress out of budgeting and gives you the tools to achieve your financial life goals. For me, that's a trip to French Polynesia. Download Yolt for free from the App Store or Google Play Store today. Today on Blogosphere Serious Influence, I'm joined by publicist Christopher Charnley. Chris started his career in traditional PR, working with journalists. In 2012, he started working with bloggers, and over the years, saw the influencer management side of the industry develop, and with it, its failings. Chris spotted a gap in the market for offering PR support to influencers in addition to brands, and set up his company, Charnley Communications, in 2017.
We work with what people would deem influencers. I call them digital talent, as well as brands on a traditional media basis. And that's everything from helping them grow these fabulous and fantastic brands and businesses that they've started, right through to kind of helping them do more of what they love and make the world a better place. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
And can you tell me a bit more about your background? So let's go back to the kind of beginning, where you grew up, what you were like in school, what subjects you liked, education, first job.
Yeah, I was the cheeky kid at school. Always had something to say. I guess that's the best way. And people that will be listening that know me probably know that's the right summation. I've always been fascinated in TV entertainment, how people were and are brought into brands and personalities and celebrities. It's always fascinated me, that pulling power and that kind of ability to change perception. And I think that's definitely what led me into PR. It was a subject I studied at university. I did a degree in it. I looked at marketing, I did advertising, and PR was the one thing that I just couldn't get enough of. I was fascinated. I tried my hand being a journalist. It didn't fulfill a kind of the hunger. I was more interested
in... Where were you working as a journalist, or what was that?
More so at university, just working on the student paper. I did that for a couple of years. But I was more interested in making that brand more relevant. So taking it from print to online, launching a TV channel with that, and kind of looking at how digital media was becoming more popular. I guess that's where it started.
So that was part of your university degree, working with a brand, or saying that you would be working with a brand and this is your strategy for improving its public awareness.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what university was this?
Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Loved it. The one that's famous in the in-betweeners.
So what happens after university then? Tell me about from when you graduate to your first job. What was your
first job? So my first job was at the student union. So I decided I hadn't had enough of my 3 years at university and I wanted to do something at the university. So I ran in the student union elections to become president. And I was fortunate enough that I got the opportunity to do that for 2 years. I ran after my first year and was re-elected.
And what did that role entail?
Oh, everything I now do, from brand development to issues and crisis management to, you know, getting people to engage with services, content. There was a real opportunity. I felt like my university disconnected from its audience and its customer base. And I felt like there was more to be done to celebrate students, to help the university grow and bring a sense of community, which sounds like fluff. But when you're in the moment and you can see how change can be delivered. I also wanted a year or two of practicing what I felt was the right approach. I'm somebody who knows what they want.
Yeah.
I may not know how to get there, but I will figure a way of getting that in the best possible way. And I'm very fortunate that I have people that support me that within my teams, some great relationships. And I wanted a year of trying that out. The recession had also happened. People weren't hiring within PR. It was all local council jobs, which just didn't tick my box.
I was going to ask what years this was in. So,
this would have been 2009.
2008, 2009.
Yeah.
And how old are you at that point then? Sort of 20?
22. And I thought, I've spent 3 years learning about PR. I've worked in PR agencies. Social media was starting to become a thing. So people had just shifted from MySpace, you know, decorating those beautiful profiles that then went and died overnight because Facebook came around and you're only able to access Facebook if you had a university email address. No one was really using it for other than posting drunk pictures. And I was fascinated about how you could use that to engage people. And during my election, I used social media continuously. I used it to update people on my policies, what I stood for, where I was going, how they could ask questions. I vlogged, you know, I was posting live updates on Twitter. I was posting stuff on YouTube. There's still a little bit there that I, for some reason, can't seem to get taken down. And yes, I am in a Superman costume.
What was your first social media platform that you joined?
MySpace. Yeah, MySpace was definitely the first.
Were you on Bebo?
No, missed that completely. It kind of went MySpace, Twitter. I think Twitter's probably my most fondest social media. I credit a lot of my career, a lot of my relationships within work to Twitter. I think it's a great platform.
Twitter is a very interesting platform. It's my favourite too. And it's come up actually a lot on the podcast, how much people love Twitter.
Yeah.
In terms of kind of making money from Twitter, it's not the best social media platform for sort of branded content. But in terms of community and engaging with your audience.
But don't you think that's okay? I think things can exist without you having to commercialise them. And
exactly. I mean, it's more of a problem for Twitter itself.
Massively.
But not for its users.
Even going in and being served adverts and sponsored content from influencers, bloggers, Instagrammers, it feels alien to that community, I think. For me, it's been about expression, connection, and getting to know people and then creating a relationship offline.
Do you think there's a opportune or the right amount of followers on Twitter for you to enjoy the platform? I think once you start getting too many followers on Twitter, that's when you actually can engage the worst kind of troll. You know, Twitter's known for its huge trolling.
Yeah.
YouTube comments, Twitter, you know, audience on Instagram doesn't seem to be as vicious yet.
Yeah, I can say that I've been fortunate enough where I haven't been one to experience. I've seen other creators, bloggers fall into that unfortunate space. I think for me, it's always been a more positive experience, but I'm not as fortunate. The most trolling I get is apparently there's a football manager at Newcastle United with the same surname, and every time he makes his Premier League allocation, I get a load of tweets from middle-aged men telling me I've made the wrong decision. And you know what? It's the most entertaining day of the year because I just get to tweet them back and be like, I have no context to football. You know, I'm a PR guy that enjoys Gilmore Girls.
I feel like there's a John Lewis is on Twitter. And
Poor guy.
Yeah, my delivery's late. So we're going back to your vlogging in your Superman outfit that's still out there. So we can challenge our listeners to find that.
Still there.
Tell me about the start of your company. Is there, after being president, to a step?
There's a long old path towards
that. A long old path. Well, let's in brief look at that path and your journey into influencers, because you're obviously using social media platforms, but when you discover digital first talent.
Yep. So I guess leaving Lincoln, very adamant that I wanted to be in London. I felt like London was a great place to be around other creatives. There was a lot happening here, and I was frantically applying for jobs. And I applied for a couple of jobs that actually weren't the right fit. People have always talked to me about company culture and that needing to be a good fit. When you've got bills to pay, you'll work anywhere. You know, I've worked in places that I haven't enjoyed, but it's given me the experience, the knowledge to grow and take something away from that. So I worked in a couple of small agencies that I wasn't very happy with. And this was for a couple of weeks, couple of months, whilst I found something better. But I loved being here and I loved being in the environment and in the place that I needed to do. Then I was very fortunate that I got a job in a PR agency that was measured on results. So you pay us X, we will get you X amount of coverage for that fee. And if we don't, you don't pay us for that time.
Interesting. Which agency was that?
It's called Diffusion. I'm not sure if they still operate by that model, but I thought that was an epic opportunity to go in there and really kind of...
prove your value.
Yeah. You know, learn, crash, burn, get yourself back up again and push forward. And they were a great agency. They had a really interesting mix of clients, people from Mothercare, L'Oreal, Air New Zealand, Primark. It was an interesting mix.
What was the biggest lesson you think that you learned whilst you were there?
Relationships are key. So be that relationships with press, clients, bloggers, influencers.
Is that where you first discovered bloggers and influencers?
Yeah. So my first ever job really in the space was monitoring and looking at Zoe Suggs' written blog. This is before she ventured into YouTube.
Wow.
We were looking at her written blog about her Primark hauls, or what she was going into Primark, taking pictures of, and the same for Fleur de Force. So looking at what she was posting. And we did daily, weekly updates to Primark on the products they were buying, the way in which they were talking about them and how people were engaging with that. And Primark spent a lot of time and effort on that. And it grew from there. So we're talking about a 2-year period from where we went from watching and listening and learning to then starting to build out a plan of interaction. So I think now a Primark haul is kind of bread and butter for any fashion influencer or YouTuber or Instagrammer. They all do it.
Do you think back in the day when you're talking about the kind of Fleur de Force and Zoe Sugg, that was the glory days of PR in terms of the influencer industry?
No, by any means. I think PR has been slow to catch up with this movement.
In what ways?
I think in a number of ways. I think I have always taken an interest in it because of the digital element and kind of quite clearly recognising that if I want to engage with anybody under the age of 25... they're not reading magazines, they're not reading newspapers, they're not watching BBC News. Where are they? And they're on social media at that point. And I enjoyed far more as a PR, building a relationship with a blogger, creating an experience for them, be it an event, a gift, a money can't buy opportunity, and allowing them to rejoice in that moment. I think what it's become now is very transactional. You send blogger gift, you hope that blogger talks about gift. And if blogger doesn't, PR reprimands blogger in some kind of way for not endorsing product or responding to that in a way that you had particularly anticipated.
So sort of PR has sent blogger product, blogger doesn't talk about product, so PR blacklists blogger from all future opportunities.
Maybe. You know, I think that's a worst case scenario, and I think that's not a way to build relationships with anybody. But that's definitely what it's become. And I've seen it from very early, you know, 2012, where we were looking at these blogs that had influence, and still very much do today, but it was an emerging trend. And from where that was to where that is now, it's been incredibly slow. So, you know, I did 2 incredible years working on brands like Primark and Air New Zealand and Mothercare, where we would outreach to mummy bloggers. Mumsnet had, you know, was slowly building and becoming a community that you engaged with. But it still wasn't in a PR's portfolio. I was railed in front of clients as kind of, ooh, this young guy has some ideas about these guys that will, you know, write blog posts or, you know, even social media endorsements wasn't really a thing. It was about what you could get on a blog post or what you could learn. And I loved that we were taking an opportunity to learn from someone like Zoe Sugg about what she liked and what her audience connected with and how a brand could be a part of that and how a brand could create products that the audience desired and wanted rather than kind of going, here's one size fits all.
Which brands do you think today are doing influencer outreach very well?
All my clients. No, Jack. I think it's harder to define who's doing what. I always think good influencer marketing doesn't look like influencer marketing. But then at the same side, you find agencies who are huge talking about how they've managed to create this campaign that they've spent hundreds of thousands on with an influencer. And it's done really well. But no one's really talking about what those results were.
Going back to your point earlier, when you were saying that it has become more transactional in terms of these opportunities, and do you agree that there's a difference between press and influencers? Because You know, if you're offering someone from the press an opportunity, that's on top of them having an income, you know, a salary. Whereas with an influencer, when they're working essentially as freelancers, going on an opportunity that may look great on the Instagram feed is actually cutting out a week's worth of...
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's nothing more atrocious than that. You know, you hear these horror stories of where bloggers have been sent generic emails offering them a trip somewhere and they have to take a week off work. I think, without wanting to sound like a know-it-all, I've always been very fortunate to try and understand where this blogger, Instagrammer, YouTuber has been coming from. What are the challenges in their life that, you know, if I'm having a press trip to Mykonos to promote my new lipstick and I want to get somebody there, I will find a way of getting them there that's fair to everybody, that allows them to take time off from working to have this great experience.
Hypothetically speaking, then, what would that look like to make it fair?
I think it's down to the individual blogger to have a conversation, to have a relationship. You know, when I talk about this being transactional, it's all done over email. There are very few agencies or PRs out there that have solid relationships and friendships with social media talent. They don't know what they're doing in terms of, you know, their social schedule, their lives, their business commitments. They're going in cold. And I think one of the reasons why we've been very fortunate at our consultancy is that we've taken the time to get to know people. We've taken the time to find out what's right for them. We've taken the time to understand that that opportunity isn't right, but there might be one further down the line. And I think it becomes about, what are you asking for that individual? So if you're inviting a beauty blogger to Mykonos to experience this one-of-a-lifetime trip, great. But your content's probably going to be the sunny beaches, pools, cocktails. Your lipstick's probably going to be one Instagram post. Don't then be angry at that individual for not delivering what you in your PR mind had anticipated. When actually, if you are venturing into what I feel that would be more of a marketing brief, you should be putting budget on the table and investing back into that relationship in the same way that that blogger has done into your brand, or finding a way that you can create some kind of value for them outside of a product that every other blogger on that trip is going to be taking home with them at the end of the day. I think it's down to PRs, advertising agencies, media agencies to be far more creative, to be far more engaging, and to be far more loyal to these individuals than they have been.
Do you think that, on the whole, PR companies feel like when they send a brief out with an opportunity to an influencer, the influencer is lucky to get that? And that that's creating, there's still an imbalance in the view of influencers. So PRs, by giving influencers things, they're doing them a favour, and we're still not at a point where influencers and press are seen as equals, even though they're not the same. And how would you differentiate between influencers and press?
It's really interesting. In the early days of your PR career, you're almost taught that a journalist and press is, they're the holy grail. They're the sought after product. Creating relationships with press is so important. And if you get a good one, it will be so rewarding for your career. And to prioritize your journalist relationships over your clients. However, digital talent, influencers, YouTubers, don't feel it's the same. And I'll be honest, I went to an event this week with a client, and it was an opportunity for agencies, PRs, advertising, media to come together and talk about the state of influencer marketing. And this particular panel was on how to best engage influencers. I use quotations there, by the way, as I'm sure everybody does, in a brand's campaign. Or how do you build relationships and how do you make the most of influencers?
So this is an agency event?
Yes.
Yeah.
And in my head, it was a great opportunity for the client and absolutely the right decision to do.
And your client in this case is an influencer?
Yes, they're radio presenters.
Are all of your clients influencers, or do you have brand clients as well?
We have both.
Okay, I'll go into that later. Let's go back to this event.
So yeah, there's an event, it's a breakfast, there's a room full of 80 PRs, all chomping for the bit, all there with their busy notepads. And on stage, you have my clients and you have several other agencies all talking about what they think is best for the state of influencer marketing. Typical questions like, how do you engage influencers? How do you find working with influencers? What type of campaigns have you worked on with influencers? What do you think of the state of influencer marketing? Where do you think the trends are? And I'm sat there and I'm going, no one's asking my client those questions. arguably they are the influencer. And I think that is representative of an issue. You have PRs, arguably, I'm sat here doing this myself, sat here talking about your craft and your work and why you're better than every other agency in this field. But no one's sitting and listening to the creator, the talent, the influencer. And
that's, or asking the right questions when they do get the opportunity because they don't know.
Absolutely. We moved away from the kind of core panel on stage and we opened to the audience. And about half of the questions were to the client. And it kind of restored some faith and humanity. And I kind of, you know, the event finished, I had a chat with the client and they just said, we get this all the time. And I just said, to me, it's not how I conduct or how my team conducts what they do. When we work on a brand campaign, an opportunity with creators or influencers, for me, we're lucky to be working with those individuals. And I've even said to my brand clients, sometimes I have the influencers' interests more in favor than I do yours. And that delivers better for both. But we certainly enter into any partnership on an equal ground. And to hear otherwise, I'd be disappointed. I don't think press, influencers, celebrities, journalists, producers, they shouldn't be treated any differently. It should be equal. And I think as a PR, people always kind of challenge me on, well, what do you do differently to journalists than you do with bloggers, Instagrammers, influencers? And I say, I don't treat them any different. It's just a different channel to engage with a different audience. And you should treat everybody with respect and with a view that there's a long-term partnership to be had. And it disappoints me from that event that I talked about and from what I see that that isn't everybody's approach.
Do you think that moving forward it will evolve to that being the case?
They will if they're listening to this podcast. I think, I would hope so. I think there are a lot of great people doing some great work out there. I think there are other people that are purely interested in their 20% of a commission. And I think that's a very scary place for anything, you know, be that influencer, be that celebrity, be that TV, be that film, yeah, where you're chasing your 20%. That to me is very...
scale of deals rather yeah, than quality of deals.
And it can be kind of, you know, one opportunity for 6 months and then nothing versus I would be far more interested in doing nothing and working to a longer scale partnership where you are able to create something further along the line than you are in the moment.
Or 6 months in a brand campaign that actually isn't right for the influencer and then deters other brands who are right for them to work with them in the long run.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the start of your business? What year are we in and what was the light bulb moment where you're like, I want to start?
So I guess I've had nearly about 6 or 7 years by now working in traditional PR. I've been spending a lot of time more and more working with digital talent, getting them involved and inputting into what my brand's clients are doing. And I've built some great relationships. And it was actually some of our clients today that are from an influencer space and people that we've worked with that turned around and kind of said, we enjoy working with you. More people need to work like you. Why don't you go into management? And I kind of went, oh, that's interesting. But everybody else is doing management, aren't they? And I didn't really like what I was seeing in the management space. And I kind of went, oh, okay, maybe, maybe not. And then a couple of opportunities came. There were a couple of larger social talent agencies that offered me quite good senior roles to come in and kind of help them re-strategize their management teams, how they better nurture social talent, how they better bring brands in to collaborate with those. And there were three in particular that I really liked the look of. And I kind of went, could I do something for all of you at once? Two of them said no. One of them said yes. One of those people is now a client today.
So a talent management agency is also a client of yours?
Yes.
So you need to break down. You have a lot of different clients. You've got influencers direct, influencer management, brands.
So I guess the best way to describe us is we're a traditional PR agency in a sense that we represent people in helping them to grow their profile. If that is a film, TV show, if that is a personality, an event. There are two sides. There's the brand side, which we call the consultation. So that's where we consult with brands on how to best build their publicity strategy, and that's across traditional press, digital, social, influencer. And then on the other side, we represent social talent on a traditional media basis. So that is taking a client and helping them bolster their traditional media profile in magazines, TV, and other opportunities. But we approach it in a way that's relevant to that particular individual. So we've had a couple of horror stories where YouTubers have been pushed into mainstream TV shows, and they shouldn't have. They should have taken an opportunity to kind of think about where their audience sits, how those audiences will respond to that individual, because YouTube culture, I think, is so different to what is consumed within magazines and print and TV, and it has its own set of rules. And we had seen a couple of cases where people had been pushed into opportunities and they hadn't necessarily been managed so well.
I will ask you about that moving forward, but at the moment we've got PR management. So are you an...
So this is the interesting bit. People,
you're a publicist, PR, an agent.
No.
No.
So we're a publicist.
What are you?
This is the interesting bit. People perceive us to be a talent management agency when we're not. So we work with talent managers. We work with the teams at Gleam, James Grant, WME. You know, we work across the whole section. And our job is to come in to their teams and provide media kind of specialisms.
And do they pay you then on a consultancy or retainer or a salary?
Retainers. So we're paid for our time on a kind of day-by-day basis, and that sits outside of the agent model. We, you know, we work directly into our clients.
And so do you ever take a commission off some of the talent that you represent if they do a brand deal?
No.
Do you ever connect the brands that are on your roster with the influencers that are on your roster?
Yes.
But you get nothing from that?
No. And I don't feel we should.
Why do you not feel you should when other people are doing that for connecting? That's quite a valuable proposition. It means that you remain objective, which is definitely valuable because you're not pushing the deals through, but why are you not?
I'd rather be that objective voice. And I think there is far more to be had in a relationship than there is to have, you know, a commission. And I think that's what makes us different to a lot of agencies out there, is that we're really frank. We say it how it is. We'll tell a client when they've messed up. We'll tell a client when they've done something great. We'll also point out when there's an opportunity that they really need to go after and they're not used to hearing it. I think, you know, we worked with two very particular well-known YouTubers, and the first thing that came out of our first meeting together was, oh wow, I don't think we've ever been told no. It's great to hear. Absolutely the right decision.
Know why you shouldn't work with someone.
Why they shouldn't take that opportunity. And that was a press opportunity. It was a TV show. And I rationalised why they shouldn't be going for that. Other people around the table were saying yes.
Do you think commissions are the enemy of the influencer industry?
I think it's a broken model. I think it's really interesting that value can be equated to a percentage. And if I was of a global scale... So, you know, take some of the bigger talent, first generation YouTubers. I'd be asking what value management bring. I'd also be asking what value a PR brings. You know, how can you define that? Because arguably, my profile and standing brings me the work. What does that 20% look like? And that's certainly what we hear all the time.
Well, you're seeing a lot of people leaving management as well. But in terms of the value add and how you explain that to an influencer coming on and wanting your services, is that very much, look, we'll strategize and build your profile. And actually, the value that we're adding isn't only which deals to take, but which not to take. And that is what people are not saying enough, not to do.
The commercial side, I'll be really honest, we don't get involved in, because it raises tensions with agents and management, because they're all fighting for their 20%. And that's been a hard one and a learning for me to try and manage. Our job when we come in is often to, how do we ensure that the brand is relevant? Where is the opportunity to grow? And what does that look like? And then how should that look within press? And we often build from there. And what tends to happen is that our success is measured on strategic value. So, you know, the decisions that we've advised on, what has that led to and what has that generated in terms of growth, views, press coverage, You know, there's often a spike to a lot of our clients when we start to get them more press coverage that the brands that they want to work with start to come knocking at the door. So there's a commercial value. But in terms of day-to-day commercial deals, that is kind of dealt with by their agent. And we're really clear with that. Anybody we work with, we kind of go, just want to make that really clear. We won't be doing any brand deals for you. Our job is to manage your profile within the press, to get the right people knowing about you, to get the right people talking about you, and getting those people back to your YouTube channel, if that is indeed your strategy.
So when people come to you, when influencers come to you, do they already have a strategy in mind and then you just refine it with them?
Some.
What are the most common wants from an influencer when they meet you for the first time?
I think when someone strikes up a conversation about publicity, it's a very well thought out approach. They've often had to do a lot of work because it's such a new area. Publicity has existed for celebrities, actors, stars, high profile brands for years. And it's a new thing for social talent. And it's an area that we're invested in because we want people to succeed. We want people to have long term careers. But we also want them to exceed outside of their YouTube success. So when someone comes to us, it's often a really well thought out and informed conversation about, this is no longer working for me. I'd like to try something new. And it's about refining that strategy with where are the opportunities? How would people respond to that in a media landscape? How can we work with management? How can we bring other specialists in? So, you know, if a client comes to me and goes, I want to be a presenter, I go, great. I'm not a presenting coach. We need a presenting coach. If you want to do voiceover work, you probably need a vocalist coach. However, we can create opportunities for people to see you as a potentially credible presenter. We can put you in front of the right people. We can get people talking about you in the right way. And it builds from there. It's not overnight success.
And did they pay you on a retainer individually? Or is that there normally the people are of the size where they have agents representing them and it's a side product that they get the benefit of your coaching because they're signed?
No, it comes direct from the individual.
Okay, that's interesting to know. Another question, or rather something that I hear often from brands, is that sometimes having an agent or a publicist, someone in the middle, actually isn't conducive to deals coming through and is prohibitive. And especially, I suppose, in terms of the publicity and building out your profile, you're responsible for how that person appears. What's your advice for other publicists? You know, lots of them are known as pushy and interfering. So
I think you can be pushing and interfering and get what you need to get done. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I think PRs are by nature, in my experience, very confrontational and very interested in that one transactional momentum versus I'm far more interested in building a relationship. I think putting a PR and an agent manager together is actually one of the best relationships. And our clients, along with their managers, we've created and done some incredible things, but it's taken the two forces to come together.
And become one voice. Because I think sometimes when you do have a publicist in the middle or an agent in the middle, giving a dialogue that actually isn't what the
It should be
talent.
Completely aligned. You know, and I talked about earlier about being an impartial voice, absolutely, but it's about how you approach that. We work very collaboratively with all of our kind of clients, partners, and that could be people who are building brands for them, merchandise. It can be their agent. It can be their cleaner. You know, we may need to work on something, and I think it's really important to always come into something with an open mind and a really collaborative approach. Not everybody is receptive to that, but it's certainly the way I like to approach projects, and you are able to achieve some incredible things. We don't come to the table with all the answers. I love to learn as we go, and it's about reflecting and refining a strategy and going, that landed okay, but next time it could do so much better if we tweaked other bits and pieces. I think a really interesting example of where that collaboration works really nicely is one of our clients in the beauty space. She is known for her acne. And when we came into the conversation with her and she brought us in because she wanted to help change the world. She wanted the world to be a better place for women.
Is that M. Ford? You Look Disgusting campaign,
yes.
Which went viral. That's interesting because I'd like to talk to you about going viral.
So we had no involvement in that. That had already happened and it was 2 years after. And I think this client in particular had found themselves in a challenging space where commercially they're being told, don't talk negatively about makeup brands because they won't do spons with you. And internally, this individual's going, but the product's crap. Why would I encourage my audience to go and spend £100 on a foundation that's crap? I'm not willing to compromise my integrity. I'm not willing to compromise my audience. And with any of our clients, the first thing that's on the table is the audience. Everything we do serves that audience. They are the priority. Because without them, there's nothing.
Yeah.
And in any YouTuber, regardless if they're sat there with 15 million subs or 500, the audience is paramount. And if a creator, influencer has moved on from that audience, we won't work with them.
I suppose you also want to have a client list that you can supply, I suppose, and be able to work without being spread too thin.
Yeah, I think so. I think, and for us, we're interested in taking people on or working with people from a variety of backgrounds. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Em, she was put in a challenging position about whether or not she continues to critique makeup brands and earn no money, or does she re-strategize? And the thing that we loved about Em was her core mission was to, I want women to feel better about how they look and how they feel internally. And working with a client on something like that is a dream. Because you can help people, you can do some great creative stuff, but actually at the end of the day, you're helping people feel better and changing lives. And with her, it was the skin positivity movement. We sat down, we talked about how the best way to approach that was, and to actually go, we'll forget the brands for a bit, and we'll talk about how you and your audience can connect and the best way to do that.
So with Em recently, one of her pictures got taken by Huda Beauty, a big Dubai makeup brand, about how to fix acne. You know, in that situation, what do you do with that? Do you have a meeting and say how you're going to handle it? Or
in that particular situation, Em did what she felt she felt the best way to approach it, and she called that individual out. You know, I think there's a line about where we as PRs become too much about censorship. So if any of our clients have an adamant feeling that they want to do something because that's a way of engaging with their audience, it's absolutely nothing to do with me. It's about them and their connection with their audience. And I think we have to be really careful about overly crafting images. We're not crafting false perceptions with clients. We're helping them be exactly who they are, but in front of more people. We're not sat there going, you need to look a certain way, you need to dress, you need to talk about this. Absolutely not. I think that's what people think publicity is. We're sat there going, right, how can we get more people to connect with this message? And it's done on such a higher level. And if that can change people's lives, then even better.
And connect with you now, but also be connecting with you in 5 years' time.
Absolutely.
Now, in that list, you mentioned that you have worked with Joe Sugg before, who is a contestant this year on Strictly Come Dancing. Do you think that we're about to have a sort of seminal moment with influencers and the mainstream where finally the mainstream get it? How important is Joe Sugg being on Strictly, do you think? Is it important at all?
I think it's really important. I think what it represents is this generational divide within how we consume content and media. Strictly Come Dancing is a show where the average viewer is upwards of 40. It's old school BBC. And I think Joe's such a charming individual, and it's such a perfect opportunity for him because he's just being himself and he's taking people on a journey about how somebody growing up in the UK in this digital age survives, makes relationships, earns a living.
Do you think one of the biggest challenges in the influencer industry is brand safety? Brands thinking or being stung by influencers? And to that degree that maybe it's safer to go through influencers who do have management or someone like you advising them on best practice?
I think from our perspective, you know, the relationship that they have with a brand, it's completely separate to what we do. And I would hate for people to perceive that it's this censorship, that we don't play a role in that. I think sitting here with
You're not nurturing someone to become in quotes, brand safe.
No, absolutely not. And if anything, we would encourage somebody to have more of a voice, as I mentioned with M. Ford.
Yeah.
For me, it's interesting how people would approach this space. And I think my biggest challenge is that I sit here with a PR hat on and a business owner, but I also sit here as a friend to a community. And I've seen people succeed. I've seen them be challenged. I've seen people do great things. And I've seen people where there hasn't been success. What worries me is that people approach this from a commercial aspect, that I will create something that brands can come to, when actually it should be about connecting with people on whatever level that chooses to be, if that's...
Well, that's a stronger level of influence as well,
I think influence as a product is become a product. People are buying what they think is influence with brand deals. And for me, I would be far more interested in seeing people who have a voice and have something where they're willing to make the world a better place, rather than just profiteering so that they can go and buy lavish handbags or trips to Paris or whatever. I think there's more to be done in the world right now than that transactional way. But I think it's the way that structure is framed has been led by a management model. I think people are coming into this and going, I can have a career on YouTube or I can have a blog, but in order for it to be successful, brands have to pay me to promote their products. No, your community, your blog, your channel can be completely successful by the way in which it connects with people. And yes, if brands feel like they can add value to that community, then absolutely invite them in, you know, earn a living from that. Do things that you can then give back to your audience. I think that's the way people should be approaching it. And that's certainly the way in which we approach our brand work. We don't come in and go, 2 million followers. Ooh, would be great to get an Instagram picture of a chocolate bar right there. It's, what are you up to? Are you a fan of this brand? Great. What's your experience with it? Do you have ideas on what we could be doing together? And what does that look like?
That's very interesting. It feels like you're kind of the ages of influencers, and we're kind of at the beginning when that commercial side wasn't there, and really you want to bring people back to their roots and then guide them in growing that kind of personality and themselves, and taking that factor out of it and then reinstalling it later, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see how that would be a way. And yeah, that is how some people approach it.
What are your views on influencer events at the moment? Let's say Summer in the City, that's been going for 10 years. Talk to me about Summer in the City.
Well, I think that, not to push this back onto you, but I think that the challenge starts with the fact that they're being referred to as influencer events. Influencer is such an ugly word, or has become such an ugly word.
I think the trouble is with the term influencer, and so many people, you know, don't like it, but there needs to be a term to define this industry, and that's just what it's become. Yeah. And I don't think you can change the agencies or brands' minds.
But we like a challenge. I prefer to use the word either digital talent creator, and I think...
Hello and welcome to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, the podcast all about the digital talent industry.
But, you know, a spade is a spade in hindsight. But I think what was really interesting is I think these events are great. I went to my first Summer in the City about 4 years ago, and I was like, what is this? And my eyes were opened, because you knew about the space, but you didn't really know about what was going on. I think it might have even been 5 or 6.
Do you think the industry day at Summer in the City is good, though?
No. I went to my first one this year, and I've avoided it for years before, because I just thought, oh, this is so cringe. And this is quite a graphic analogy, but, you know, it was almost like you had a cow in one room and you had all the butchers in the room next door talking about how they were all going to carve their cut of meat from the cow. And you had everybody in there talking about how to best utilize influencers, how to get the best content, how to get the best value for money, what you should be spending on influencers.
Were influencers on those panels as well?
I think there were a couple, but I even think the talent attending know to avoid it. And that's nothing to do with the event organizers. They do an incredible job. Dave and the team, you know, they do an absolutely fantastic job, and Tom and everybody put their heart into it. But I think the creator day for me this year, I even said it to people. I went, oh...
Creator Day is the industry day.
The industry day, yes. The Friday this is just so cringy. You have brands patting themselves on the backs, agencies patting themselves on the back for how they best utilised an influencer. And you have the influencers all in the next room, and some in the room, kind of going, oh, so this is how people think they can best essentially make use of me. And I think that's horrendous.
A big thanks to Chris for coming on the show. You've been listening to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, with me, Alice Audley. Join us next week for a brand new episode. Until then, be sure to check out blogospheremagazine.com for influencer industry updates. And why not treat yourself to a magazine subscription whilst you're there?